The Science College almost became something almost to be ashamed of at one particular time. Now that's all turned around again. It's almost rich now that we'd be able to afford a new roof with a thatch on it.
I suppose it's like two trapezoids, and there's a kind of a valley junction where they meet.
It's quite geometric in the folds, but then once you cover it in thatch, it sort of softens it. It looks nearly like a bit of a woolly mammoth or something.
The thatcher was revered in Donegal's communities for generations. To create a roof of straw or reed that kept occupants protected from the elements was an essential skill and a vernacular art. Thatched cottages are a rare sight nowadays, and as they disappear, so too part of our rural heritage. But Redcastle thatcher Brian Lafferty loves his work and doesn't intend laying down his tools anytime soon.
The two tools that a thatcher never uses is a line or a plumb. There's no such thing as a perfect thatched cottage. There was nothing perfect about anything that was done all those years ago. All these laser beams now and everything else, but there's no laser beam when I get up on a roof, you know. I suppose that's what makes it more natural. And, you know, everything was done by eye. So there's no such thing as a perfect thatched cottage. It looks perfect. There's no such thing. But it's naturally done. So I think that's what's the beauty about it as well.
Thatching is a craft passed on, and these skills were built on the deep, intricate knowledge that each thatcher acquired of the materials to hand locally, which led to different regions or parishes developing their own signature styles.
What you're looking at there now is a style that would be almost unique to any shown or coastal areas. First of all, you had the scraw here. Hazel underneath, whatever was handy, whatever, they would go to the glen and just whatever timbers they could get underneath the scraw. This scraw here was very important. It's just roots and grass and soil. This hill is scallop. It would be under the thatch like this.
What is a scallop? Describe that to me now. What you
it's
have
a bit
in your
of hazel,
here.
Split hazel, but there's a twist on it here. It's like a hairpin just, but this is the secret here, the twist here. And what the twist does, you see it acts as a spring.
Right.
So that when you put that into your roof, it springs back out and won't fall back down again. If you didn't have that coming like that with that angle, if you did it like...
If you went straight in.
That. If water got to here, it would run in.
And wet the thatch.
Yeah. So that would be scalloped on here, like as you see here, these rows of thatch here. They would be scalloped on like that. It's always hidden because, as you can see underneath, I have already a row on here, but it's all hidden because I'm going up now with another
right.
row. Then, as we would move the material up the roof, we would use what you call a legget. So, as you can see, that would be giving you your finished... and then you would repeat that again and until you come to the top.
And that's, you're using a piece of steel here now, and it's got a flat... square head at the top. Very importantly, it has a kind of honeycomb effect on the inside.
That just allows the material to go up evenly. It gives it a grip to move the material up the roof. But in the older days, going back years ago, it would have been a wooden skull.
And as you're doing that, I mean, that's how you're creating a lovely angle. So when the thatch goes on to the roof in little sections, almost the way a tiler
like
would do
this,
it.
That's what's actually happening here is, you see, if you move that up the roof too far, you're going to show too much of the stem. So if it rained on this here, all that stem would be wearing at the one time. So the fact that you only show the edges, it's only the edge can wear with the weather. But if I went up here with my neck, started up here with the next one, all this would be exposed to the weather.
The angle is acting to run the water off, but it's also acting as an insulation as well. So there's layers building.
That's right. You would take a lot of years off a roof if your pitch slackens. You know, if you come from 40 down to 35 or 30, you take years off your roof because it's too flat.
Right.
And the water doesn't get off it quickly enough.
Compared to modern building methods, thatch has a certain alchemy. It conforms to no line, each handful unique, and often an entirely different plant source if you're by coast or inland. In a thatcher's expert hands, this base material turns to gold.
Well, in this area here, my father would have used flax, used straw, but I'm going to show you a material here that maybe few people have heard of. It's called spritz. My father liked to use that for the old byres and stable and the old outer houses, you know. And this here would be rushes, but you can see almost there seems to be a connection there.
So some kind of reed or something.
But it's definitely different to the rushes. The rushes my father
it's
always.
It's a little bit like you know that shiver grass, you know the kind of a bit like that, the Quaker grass. And where would this have grown? Where would you get this?
That would have grown just about a few hundred meters from here. But it just grew in small patches, you know. You would never get a field of it. It just seemed to grow in small areas, you know. But my father would have used that. You have the straw here as well. So there you have flax, and you have straw, and you have reed, you have spritz, and you have rushes. You'd always, West Donegal would have used a lot of fannin. It was just like a short grass type that grew in the hills. And also the marram grass that grew in the sand dunes.
I suppose it was what was the material next door to you.
That would be whatever was handiest.
From you now working them through the years, are some of them better than others, or how do they work?
For me, the flax would be, I'd prefer the flax to the straw. And a new roof, I would recommend reed, water reed. It's longer lasting. Now I'll show you just a different style. It's a style that developed here, and I don't think too many modern day thatchers would approve of it, but it's a style that I wouldn't like to see lost either, because it's disappearing fast. Modern day thatchers won't do it. You don't use any scallops at all. You just start at the eaves and you turn the heads out like this, and there will be nothing holding that on from the eaves to the ridge, but it will be then covered with a wire mesh. And it's a lovely style. You'll see it right around Anishowen. You won't hardly see the scallop style in Anishowen. And it's a style that developed, I think, when people used to use the marram grass. And I think it would have came maybe from there, because sometimes the roots of the marram grass would have been a bit coarser, you know. And but it's a style that's used. Hazel didn't grow that easily, you know, in exposed areas.
Of course.
So that was why they had to just put on the thatch loose and then do it with ropes. Eventually the ropes would start to rot, and if they were in bad condition when a storm came in, that definitely would take part of the roof with it. But the wire mesh is right enough. But then in coastal areas, sometimes the wire mesh is inclined to rust a wee bit with the salt water. So the old ropes you see had
there's
a purpose.
There's problems both sides, yeah.
Watching Brian is like watching a fine sculptor work this beautiful roof. But I wondered what future this craft has if it's now mainly used for conservation. Can there be a modern place for thatch, as art? Then I heard about something curious in Ard's Forest.
For me, it's a building, a structure, and it has an interior.
I think it's somewhere between art and, a building. Art doesn't necessarily have to be something you look at, it's something you experience.
In 2013, architect Tom O'Brien and artist Emily Mannion won an Irish Architecture Foundation competition to create a structure that would enhance its natural surroundings.
They were looking for some sort of a temporary pavilion to go in Ard's Forest Park. They had outlined a few different sites you could choose, and they were looking for something that might last, I think they put a time frame of about 3-4 years. We'd been working together on different art projects and things quite a bit before that, and when this came up, I think we kind of jumped on it, and we far exceeded what they asked for. We had a full set of working drawings. We had all the imagery, and we sent in a large 1:20 scale model, which they didn't ask for, but I think we left them with very little choice but to give us the job.
Sensitive to the soft beauty of this landscape, the pavilion Tom and Emily designed combined traditional thatch with a very modernist geometric shape.
I suppose it's like two trapezoids meeting. And there's a kind of a valley junction where they meet.
It's quite geometric in the folds, but then once you cover it in thatch, it sort of softens it. It looks nearly like a bit of a woolly mammoth or something, which has been said. I just think it was lovely to use a material that was local to Donegal, and it's weathered really quite beautifully up there.
You could have used wood and it would have been a local material, or...
Because the form is so angular, it would have, if we'd had to clad it in any other material, we would have had a lot of very strange, difficult junctions. Whereas with thatch, you just keep going. You just, it'll turn a corner.
I suppose it's unusual to see it on a structure like that, and it's never been used. Well, I've never really seen it used as a wall, which it effectively is. You know, it's like a roof structure, but it's a wall as well. So you get quite close to it, which is quite exciting when you're down there. You can really touch it, and you feel like you're, and you have a different relationship to it when it's around you like that, you know.
Finding someone to take on the task of covering this imposing skeletal structure on the vertical in thatch wasn't easy.
I'd sent the model through to a few different thatchers and a few around the country, and the ones that did get back to me it was just too much. It was nearly the cost of most of the build, which is probably was right, because it's quite difficult.
Eventually, though, they found Ivor Kilpatrick.
Like, we showed the model to Ivor down in his farmyard, and he kind of went, yeah, grand. And then when he eventually turned up on site and turned the corner with his van and horse box, he said he saw the structure, and he said he was nearly going to reverse back out of the place.
I think he just really was interested in the project from the start, and he said it would take a week, and it took him much longer because it was very difficult, and it kind of bends round, and thatch isn't really meant to do that.
The difficulty was in the actual doing the thatching. Normally you're up on a roof that's at whatever 35 degrees and you can kind of work on the surface of the thatch, whereas this is, it's probably 80 degrees in places, so you can never work on it. You're working off a scaffold, and it's just that bit more difficult, I suppose.
It's practical, but also it's a really beautiful material, so it highlights how lovely it is, really.
Yeah. We weren't conscious of the sensuality, I suppose, of it until we started using either, like, the smell of it, the seeds that fell out and sprouted, all these kind of things, these surprises that came out of it. And you can still smell the thatch when you go in the timber, and that's quite a strong part of the experience of it.
Yeah. Even though it is actually opens up into the rain, but as you sit down, the rain falls and you can see it sort of fall.
While you're quite protected from the wind and the driving rain that you often get up there, you might still get, you know, kind of the dropping of the rain down through it, which is, you can get shelter in it, but you're not completely set apart from the reasons that you came out to Ards in the first place, to experience nature or get some peace.
You be the master and I'll be the apprentice. Tell me how I would do it if it was going to be me.
Yeah. Well, you would lay this. You would lay this here.
So, this piece that's here.
Yeah. Like that there. See, if you're going that way there, you can pack back against that.
Right.
You know. Then you're going to take the legget.
Take the legget, right.
And you're going to beat that up into your knees. And see how it travels up the roof. Right here.
And is that too much of an angle now, or
no,
is that okay?
That's good.
It's lovely. It's like a tight haircut.
So depending on the depth you were putting on, if you weren't putting on as much, you might have to move up the roof a bit further.
How long have you been doing this?
I suppose I'm maybe doing it about 25, 28 years, you know. But going back, my father would have done it before me, but only just for himself, maybe one or two neighbours, but I would have been standing in the bottom of the ladder when I was 8 or 9, 10, so I've always seen it done, you know.
And what do you work on now most? Like, is it still domestic houses, or like, what's the kind of work?
Mostly the old thatch, the old cottages, you know, not so much the new. I've done a restoration job recently now, just was completely re-scrawled, like what you see here, and old timbers were renewed with old timbers. You know, it's nice to see somebody as a young lad too that did it, so it was quite good to see him taking an interest, you know.
And why do you think it flourished as an idea? Because in other countries they put shingles on their roofs. Why do you think thatch flourished in Ireland?
Well, thatch flourished in Ireland because they had no other. It was said that when man was starting to build stone cottages, that in a frosty weather they pulled the grass to keep the frost from the lime and the clay that they were putting in the between the stones. And when they went back out the next day to work, they realised that the grass had kept the frost from getting in at the wall. So then they thought, well, when we get this built, well, that's a good idea for the roof. So then they just started to source materials locally.
It does speak, though, to a time, like, I mean, you know, you get the builders in and they'll build the house. Less so in some part like Donegal, but we were a lot more self-sufficient. Like, we kind of made our own houses from start to finish.
Yeah.
That's kind of all gone now, isn't it?
I think the demise of the thatch cottage started around 1820, especially because Welsh slate, I think, had come on the market at that time, and the trains were starting to become very common. Then as these materials started spreading around the countryside, the thatch cottage almost became something almost to be ashamed of then, at one particular time, you know. It's been known for people to slate the front of their house and keep the thatch on the back, because the back wasn't seen from the road. So they were given the impression that they lived in a slate house rather than a thatched house.
Mm.
Now that's all turned around again. You know, it's almost the rich now that would be able to afford a new roof with a thatch on it.
Mm.
You know.
It's a basic system that you're putting bundles of flax and tying them together. I presume as we move it, you can shape it really easily into...
Oh, well, you can
shape it into different shapes and stuff. There's quite a lot of flexibility there.
Yeah, there's quite a lot of flexibility.
What's this called?
That's a hazel sway, I suppose.
A sway?
Yeah, I would call it a sway.
And does that stay on it? This is like the band that grows on top.
You can't hide... That's where you see the design then, with the scallops at the ridge. You can't hide the last one.
You can't hide the last one,
and
right.
that's why if a roof's done in that style, the first thing to go would be the ridge, because the hazel and the scallops are exposed to the weather. You can't hide the last run. So
right.
As the weather starts to break these away and these starts to fall down the roof, the thatch is going to start to
slip
on the last one.
Right.
The rest will be okay. But if you're given, say, 15 or 18 years to a roof, you're talking about maybe the ridge going in about 10 years or something. So you can renew the ridge and you still have a good roof.
Is it expensive in comparison to a standard tile or slate roof? And I mean just even in the original, you know, the first putting on of a thatch, never mind the maintenance of it.
It would be expensive, definitely would be expensive, the materials and important materials. But for this old style that I'm talking about, as I say, only for the environment, Department of Environment and the Heritage, it wouldn't exist, because you're dependent on it, you know.
Mm.
Because they won't last. I mean, if you get 7, 8, 9 years, 10 years out of flax, you know, that's as much as you can expect. So you couldn't spend thousands every 7, 8, or 9, 10 years, you know. So that's granted.
But isn't it ironic where something was considered like it was the cheapest material because it was accessible and you could grow it yourself.
That's right.
And now it's gone full circle that you can't necessarily keep that tradition going.
You see, there was no value when I was young, there was no value in your time, you know. Now everybody's looking for so much an hour and all the work after that, and you see the work in here. People think you just leave home with thatch and you go to the roofing. But yes, you see yourself, the work is in here Just preparing it, you know. If you don't prepare right, you're not going to have a good roof.
Whereas a tiler can just go into the hardware and buy his tiles and slap
and
them up on the...
There's no two bundles of flax the same. I often say I would, you know, like to be like a builder, that you could reach for a block and know that they were all the same. But as you can see different materials. Some are coarser, some are finer, longer, shorter. Some I wouldn't use for the outside layer of thatch, some I would use for patching underneath first. So you have to pick and choose. It's all different colours and different.
bit like the dry stone walling, like, you know, you just,
that's
once
right.
you get to learn the instinct yeah. first, yeah.
That's right.
Contributing to the expense is the fact that it's getting harder to grow good thatch. Modern farming and river pollution have seriously altered the quality in the last few decades. Spreading slurry, for instance, produces a straw that rots in about 10 years, much earlier than you'd expect a roof to give way.
When my father went to thatch the cottages up here, he would go out to the top of the hill. He would travel out maybe 3 miles, right out on Old Bog Road with a scythe, and he would cut these rushes. And we used to say to him, "Daddy, what's you going out there to the hill to cut rushes for? You know, there's rushes down the field." And he said, "No, the rushes in the hill were the best." And I think he might not have known why they're the best. He knew they were tougher. But the more I learn about thatching and about the effect that nitrogen is having on materials now, like straw, and it's breaking down the materials quicker. There was no nitrogen out in the hills, you know.
Yeah.
So he knew that he knew they were better. Yeah. So I think it was because too that the fact that nitrates didn't get near those areas. There were no farmland near it, you know. You're looking at that flax there, just it looks so handy just to reach for it and do that with it. But I'll show you, that's all pulled by hand, as you can see the roots. It's all pulled by, that's all, but all you see in here is pulled by hand. You can see the roots came from the clay.
Is this grown locally? Where would the flax?
That's grown locally. I had grown that myself this year. Yeah, but there's a lot of work with it. My back's not better yet.
You grew this yourself?
Yeah.
Wow. And how much did you grow? Like, how much would you have to grow to get a roof?
I only grew a couple of acres, but you would have to buy in material as well.
Right.
But there's a lot of pulling by hand in 2 acres, you know.
Yeah, I can imagine. Sort of, you've been doing it now for 28 years, and as you said, you would have been at the foot of a ladder when you were a kid. Why do you love it so much?
Oh, God. Why do I love it so much? Well, I suppose it's just part of my heritage, you know. And I think because of the people that I worked for in the years, the older generation, you know. Just, I remember doing a house for a lady one time, and she said, "It's a cold evening, come on in for a cup of tea." And I said, "What about me making you a cup of tea?" And she said, "A man making a woman a cup of tea? That's never been heard of." Well, I said, "Well, try it anyway." So she had a big open fire. I said, "Go up and sit at the fire." And, do you know, when I went up with the cup of tea, she held out her two hands as much as saying, "My God, I can't believe this," you know. And the next evening she came out, and I said, same thing, "We come in for a cup of tea." And I said, "Well, just you go up to the fire and I'll make a tea." And she actually ran up to the fire. She wasn't just enjoying it so much. She was 75 years of age. She lived on her own. And she just could not believe that she could get a cup of tea made for her. I think that was the first cup of tea ever she got made for. But it's memories like that that I keeps me interested, you know. But it's the people that I worked for. If when I'm up on a thatch cottage, I can see the wee buyers, and I can picture maybe a man or a woman getting up in 2 or 3 in the morning on winter's night with no electricity, going out to one of those little buyers just to check on an animal that was about to give birth or something. And there would have been hard times, there would have been other times, there would have been music. In that house I can hear the music from the roof, even if it's 100 years later, and sometimes I can feel the sadness that would have been there for deaths, young people would have died with different things. So it's just, you have to have that feeling for, you know, for thatch, but I like it.
And do you think that's part of the material? Like, you know, when we're standing here, it feels lovely, you know? It feels like the earth kind of thing. It feels like it came out of the ground. Is that feeling important?
Well, there's a very peaceful feeling. When you're on a roof, you're not using any tools. It's just the silence, and you can hear all the sounds coming from the countryside, you know? And especially if you're maybe working close to a school and the children get out to play. It's just amazing to hear their voices coming through the air when there's no other sound, like. And then you hear the silence. Sometimes it reminds me of myself when I was at school, like, and how, you know, things like that, just, you, there's a lot of sounds of birds, and from the roof you hear a lot of sounds.
Law of Yainta is an IWR media production for Highland Radio, written and presented by Mary Brophy and produced by Neil Boyle. Funded by the Broadcasting Authority of Ireland with a television licence fee.